is Snakes and Otters, a pointless discussion of eternal questions. Get ready. We're about to live in your head rent-free.
Hello, Otterites. This is episode 218.
I am Martin.
And I'm Robert.
And I'm Francis.
And I'm Marcus.
And I'm Andre.
And I'm Cajun.
There we go. Perfect, perfect.
Very good.
Fantastic, folks. We got our guest Andre back here with us again. So wonderful to have you back here.
Welcome, brother Andre.
And Cajun's calling in remotely from the high mountains of Colorado. What's up, Cajun?
Yes, and it is snowing here. They're talking about 6 inches of snow dropping today.
Well, that's they don't give a rat's about that. You know, that's that's baby stuff for them. I mean, they can handle.
Yeah, but it's 60 degrees here.
It is, yeah, and it, I mean, it's overcast, but it's, you know, it's nice, you know. So we certainly miss you being here live with us, but you are, thanks to, it's not Memorex, but it's close enough.
Wonders of technology.
Wonders of technology. Yeah, if you got to be a certain age to get that joke. Wonders of Tascam.
And a Viking named Harold Bluetooth.
ooh, that is so good. I love it. I've never heard that before. Dang, Martin shoots and he scores yet again. But yeah, this is, again, this is a Code of Honor episode that we're going to talk about. But since Cajun is remote, and I'll let him kind of explain where he is and what he's doing, and we're going to talk about this more in depth next episode for our Hoopajube. When he gets back, it's all about writing and the craft and stuff like that. We'll get into that later. But I want to give him an opportunity to kind of say where he's at and what he's doing. So, sir, what the heck are you doing?
Well, I am presently sitting in the hotel, the Antlers, actually. It's been around since the late 1800s, where the seminar is. It's the Superstars writing seminar that Kevin J. Anderson puts on, which he's been around and writing forever now. He's done a lot of Star Wars stuff and... currently, his project coming out, and shortly is Dune. He works with the Hobbit Estate and so forth. He was one of the main factors of Dune coming back around and being written more of. Many great stars here: David Weber, Jim Butcher, Dresden Files, which I've kind of been fanboying over.
Well, you should. He's one of the best. More. Fantastic. Yeah, and you're in Denver, right? I guess we didn't say it.
It was Colorado Springs.
Colorado Springs. Yeah, okay. I want to make sure I got that right.
About an hour away.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's...
only about 6,000 altitude here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's barely nothing.
I was going to say, you're managing with that barely, am I right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I can look out the window and I can see Pikes Peak and past Cheyenne Mountain when I came in. So, you know, I wonder if the Stargate's up and running today or not.
Well, that's right. Maybe you can
take a little side trip.
That's right. Find a way over there and, you know, just do a little tripping. That's all right. Fantastic.
Is that where the Whopper was Cheyenne Mountain?
The Whopper?
The Whopper.
Yes. Yes, that is, in fact, where it was supposedly from. Yes.
Shall we play a game?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, I tell you, that is our era, and I totally
Matthew
Broderick.
Yes. Totally missed that. Wow, that's just. I should turn in my '80s card. That's terrible of me. That was a one of those formative movies back in the day.
You know, you look back at that movie, and it's like, yeah, hey, this is a really, really good flick.
It really was. I mean, there's a reason.
It was very entertaining, and
it was just something everybody remembered.
Really fun movie.
Well, there were a number of things kind of set at the idea of Cheyenne Mountain. Stargate was one of them.
Sure. Yes.
Just mentioned Stargate.
And a few other movies. A few episodes of The $6 Million Man.
Ooh, now you're reaching back. Yeah. Not reaching around, but reaching back to some. That was some great stuff for us as kids. I mean,
it was.
Gen X, especially for us guys, you really got the $6 Million
Man. $6 Million Man was super
cool. And the girls, you know, hey, the Bionic Woman was right there. My sisters were just all over that one.
But I watched them. Bionic Woman.
I did. Well, yeah, because we were of that perfect age that
all of a sudden
we noticed, wow, you know, Jamie Summers is pretty hot here, you know?
I was always more of a Wonder Woman kind
of
guy.
We could talk a long time about the amazing Linda Carter and how amazing she was.
Still is.
It still is. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, she Miss Arizona, I think she was before that. But she's just one of those icons of the late 70s, I'd say. It's an early 80s, too. But,
so Cage has been busy networking.
Man comes up. First thing I think of is the Bigfoot episode.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the ones. Yeah, that was a big deal. Well, you know, sci-fi, you know, they kind of leaned into that. more and more as the series went on. It was almost an espionage type thing at first, and then it kind of went.
Mm-hmm. Almost superhero style,
right?
Well, but, stuff, but
yeah, hey, it worked. It was still great stuff. So, Cajun, tell us a little bit more about what's going on out there.
Oh, like I say, many big writers out at this one. Like I say, Kevin J. Anderson's been in the business a long time, so he knows a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I mean, basically, he's getting all his high-powered author friends together, and they're coming out here and they're giving talks and seminars and workshops and so forth on a variety of subjects. This seminar covers indie and trad publishing.
Okay.
Because a lot of these authors are now considered hybrid, you know.
Yeah, hybrids too.
They're growing up doing both. There's been seminars on writing, for trying to write for TV shows and getting into that part of it.
I was wondering exactly
getting published, the pitfalls of Jonathan Mayberry is big. His talks are big on connected, you know, with TV shows and so forth.
Right. Yeah. Like,
yes, he's going
he
to be
a
at
a lot of writing along that line.
Yes, Mayberry is going to be at Imaginarium this coming year, so I'm very much looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, that's because screenwriting
is. Don't want to miss his talks. They're very, very good.
Good, good, good. Any pearls of wisdom for us aspiring, you know, and operating craft guys that you've picked up? I know you've sent some stuff about character that you picked up from, I think it was David Weber.
David Weber.
Yeah. Yes. Anything else that of note before we get into the subject of the day?
Let me see. I got notes right here in front of me if I can't pick out something right quick.
Of course he has notes.
I love it that Cajun's a note taker. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because you're handwriting. You know, you sent us handwritten pages. Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's like Jim Butcher said, the action scenes are easy. The setup is the hard part.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Really?
That's to keep in mind right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting, because I find the opposite to be true. I struggle with the action scenes. I'm not creating them or even knowing what's happening, but explaining the blow by blow. Robert and I were talking about that last night. It's getting that where it is, you know, you can't assume too much of that because it's so granular of the literally arm and leg and body movements. You can
yes, making the picture for the reader.
Yeah, well, a motion picture essentially.
Yes, yeah.
Because you know you're going from moment to moment, whereas dialogue does a lot of heavy lifting, but it's pretty. You know, there's more craft I think with that.
With dialogue,
I think so.
Yeah,
to tell the story.
I want to touch on one other fella that I heard last night. I sent y'all fellows a link. James Artemis Owen. He's done comic books. He's done writing. Very, very amazing fellow. I don't know if any of y'all had a chance to look at that link I sent out or not.
We haven't yet. Yeah.
I did briefly.
He had an amazing life so far. I mean, he was a very sick child. He's in the hospital for like over a year. They didn't know whether he's going to live or die.
Wow.
At the age of 14, he published his own comic book, starting his own comic book company. His life had many ups and downs. And there's something he said in his talk last night that really stands out. It's when you want to do something, no one can stop you. When you don't want to do something, no one can help you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love that.
Very true. Yes.
We're deep into motivation.
You might save that one for your code of honor next time we're out at your place, and we can go deep with that one because that's some good stuff.
Yeah, that would be great. Like I say, watch the link I sent y'all. I'm going to buy his book. I mean, it was just amazing. His talk brought me to tears at times.
How about that?
And I'm not ashamed to say that one bit.
No.
Oh, everybody loves a good witness story.
Yeah.
Everybody loves that. It's powerful. It changes lives. It's we want that. We love that.
Cajun, I know that because I asked you this before, and you said in our secure chat that you did not sign up for the MP3 recordings. Remember, if you still can do that. I'll reimburse that. I'll pay for the MP3 recordings of the conference.
I plan on asking if I can get onto that today down at the table. Excellent. I have already signed up for next year, and I've already secured my place for next year. I'll be coming back.
Fantastic.
This is a cap out. The cap out at 400 max here.
I was going to ask how many folks. I didn't realize that you know.
That's about 370 or so here.
Yeah, I think when I was looking at it online, it was definitely not all of them had sold, but it was double digits that had not.
Yeah, pretty.
That were still open slots. So yeah, that sounds about right. Which, when you think about it, that's a lot of people.
But you have access to much more prominent people here.
Yeah, Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things you kind of get what you pay for in this sense. On this,
yeah, one. We're going to go deep with that in the next Hoopajube, and we're going to depend on you, Cajun, to kind of lead a little bit of that. Talking about,
I guess I'll be captaining that one. Huh?
Yes, you will.
Yes, I think that's an excellent idea. Yeah.
Kind of talk about writing and writing is a community. I think that's where we're kind of bouncing around that idea, and leading into the greater understanding of community, which we all have and understand in different things. So put that in your thinker blinker, guys, as we move forward here. But I do, you know, this is a code of honor. You don't like the word thinker blinker?
It's not getting a word boner, I can tell you that.
Okay, fine.
What the hell you're talking about?
You've never heard that? Come on, guys.
No.
All right. Is it a unanimous hate on this one?
Oh, I don't necessarily hate it.
Andre, you have said it.
But it's not blowing up my skirt.
Yeah, this is not blowing my skirt up, gentlemen.
Well, okay, well, I've got three against...
Oh, you're wearing a skirt? I don't even have pants on.
The Imperator and Andre have not said anything. I'm assuming they're just being polite and they don't like it. And
it is a word of notoriety.
That is a very noncommittal answer, but that's wonderful. Thank you for at least trying. Okay, fine. I won't use that one again.
He's still gushing at being here, so that's why he's being polite.
I mean, it's just very Dora the Explorer or something there. I don't know.
Oh, Lord.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You know, what was...
No swiping, Swiper.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind
of... You're going to use language like that, and you're going to ruin our explicit rating.
That's okay. Yeah. All right. Fine.
Well, maybe he should use it some more.
As my eldest daughter would say, fine. And let's move on.
Yes, that's spelled F-O-I-N-E.
That's correct. Yes. That's right. Well, she's been saying that since she was one, actually, when she didn't get her way. So it's become kind of a thing in our house. But anyway, this is a code of honor. We're supposed to talk about something pithy and earth-shattering.
That wasn't it.
Really?
That wasn't it. That's right. Well, I mean, we can get funny. And
Thinker Blinker was not it.
Yeah, Thinker Blinker was
not
it.
You're not supposed to say the word. Stop saying the word. You have sent it. It is anathema. Okay, it has been
stoned. Stone him.
All right, wait. Anathema gets a button.
Word boner.
Thank you.
I'll give him that.
I'm working on redeem.
Anathema redeems. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to be redeemed slightly on that. You know, we're Catholics, boys. We do. No, most of us are, and we believe in redemption. So thank you very much for that one. But we're gonna. You guys accuse me of taking the long way around the damn barn every time I do this, so I'm going to jump.
We are 13 minutes in.
Well, in fairness, we had an aside that was already planned. Okay,
just saying.
All right,
there's a rabbit hole we already dug.
Well, that's correct. That's true.
That
was planned and expected because Cajun's joining us remotely. But so now here we are. Drum roll, please. Oscar Wilde is my source. Okay, we've used Oscar Wilde before. I'm hoping we didn't use this one.
Well, if we did, you better scramble.
Well, no, that's okay. We'll use it again because I know if we did, it was just the three of us, and you guys can tell me if one of you picked it because I didn't. But I think it's got
Oscar Wilde's not one of mine.
We've done Oscar Wilde before.
I've not done him.
Okay, well then maybe I did it, and I'm quoting myself. And if that's the case, who the hell cares? But stop raising your hand.
Okay,
Robert.
Spit it out.
All right, be yourself. Everybody else is already taken. That's my quotation. Be yourself. Everybody else is already taken.
You know, I don't believe we've done that. We've done probably some similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I brought a Nietzsche that was very similar, I think.
All right. Good.
But it was, you know, of course, more Nietzschean, meaning depressing.
Yeah. Well, this is pithy. This has got that snark that Oscar Wilde was. That's why I love using him as quotation because, man, he didn't give a shit. And he had lots of good reasons to give a shit because he was persecuted and idolized at the same time, you know. What was it they said in Wyatt Earp? A villain and an outlaw and a lawman at the same time, you know, best of both worlds.
Did he end up having to spend some time incarcerated?
He did. Okay. That is correct, yes.
Maybe I was thinking Ezra Pound. He may have also. But Wilde was incarcerated for...
homosexuality.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, he didn't go insurance. And he really just...
I mean, at that point, you have nothing to lose.
Yeah, well, he was also trading on the fact that he was Oscar Wilde, and at that point, he'd written much of his stuff, and he was, you know, well famous. So it was almost a protest on his part, saying, "Go ahead, guys, you know, bring notice to what you're doing." Yeah, because you're showing the evilness of what you're doing here.
It's a lot easier to make a protest when you're Oscar Wilde.
Yeah,
even in the middle of Victorian England.
That's right.
I mean, that's still a still a big deal. But
the word uptight shows a picture of Queen Victoria next to it.
Exactly. But, you know, although he converted at the end of his life.
Yes, he did. That's correct. His is a sad and yet uplifting story at times.
So anyways, Oscar Wilde, he is a great author. Love quotes by authors.
Well, I mean, you played in probably his most famous work.
Yes, The Importance of Being Earnest. Yes, right. Yes.
Way back
I Was Algernon.
That's right, yes. second male lead, I suppose.
Yes, yes. Yes, I knew when we were doing the auditions for that, because I wanted the lead, but the chemistry with me playing Algy and the guy who played Jack was just perfect. I knew when we were doing the auditions
it worked
who was
well.
Going to get
it
what.
It really worked. You guys did a fantastic performance. I certainly did. You see it, Martin?
Yes, I don't recall a ton of it, but I do remember being around. That was your last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was already off campus, but I remember coming around some and making sure.
Yes,
I saw
you had the famous quote that
that we can't say here.
That we can't say here.
We're trying very hard
to be much better about the explicit.
Yes, we're
innuendo.
We have
need to tone that down.
Shout out to some of our listeners who have asked to me, and you know who you are. Try not to go raunchy, and we are listening, and we're doing our very best. We hadn't told you that, Cajun, but we're just kind
of
laying that
we
out.
We found that some of the additions are bad influences.
No.
Guilty.
But anyway, go back to the quote. You know, be yourself.
Yeah, so, you know, this is very much a quote that has been not necessarily plagiarized, but many people have picked up on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things that it's a truism, because it just smacks you in the face with the obviousness of it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one of those things that we don't realize that, because we get caught up in the opposite, and people trying to be somebody else. And
oh, yeah, I think
in today's society, I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, it is, there's, dare I say, the duality of the human experience.
Ooh,
love that. That's
I want to be myself, but I also want to conform.
Yes, we're all individuals.
I'm not.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so it's. I'm sure that Python, Cleese, and Chapman, especially, I bet, were very, very in tune with
Oscar Wilde. Oh, absolutely! Yeah,
I'm sure that's where they got a ton of that material. But yeah, I mean, it is a very, you know, a part of our nature, push pull, twisty part of our nature to, well, I'd like to fit in, but I also want to be myself. Which way do I lean into?
Right. We've talked about on the show, you know, about what Tony Robbins calls those six human needs. And there are three sets, and each of the pairs are in opposition to one another. And two of those are, I want to be unique, but I want to belong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the tension that Wilde is addressing here.
Yeah.
And it's very clear from him which side you're supposed to
lean into being your own self, and which I think becomes much easier as you age, as I have found.
Really? Yes. So you're suggesting crotchetiness is a function of that?
No, what I'm suggesting is...
For Martin, maybe.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of...
But the drive to belong is so much stronger as a young person.
Oh, I think that's a... Are we all in agreement on that?
Yeah. Actually, total. No. I mean, I'm not in total agreement with that, because I think both are incredibly strong. Because when you think about when we were young, you know, we were very much we're all individuals kind of thing, because we were trying to express our uniqueness by everybody wearing black, you know, and dark eyeliner and stuff.
We were,
you know,
so willing to throw down any individualism in order to be a part of a group.
Well, we thought we were being individualistic, but it wasn't being individualistic so much as it was just being not who we were in our parents' house.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're referring to, Mark.
But it came out as, okay, we're all going to do this same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we told ourselves that, oh, yes, we're being very individualistic.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. I mean, there's such a strong drive to conform, because I just find, as I think about it more and I reflect on my kids' experiences, high school is barely a step above
torture.
Yeah, I mean, it's barely a step above
prison yard,
juvie hall. I mean, you cram 18 kids in 1,800 kids in a building, and depending on what their skill sets are,
yeah, and we use that term very loosely.
Yeah, I mean, my youngest went to one of the better high schools in the area, And so it's not so much physical, it's psychological with them.
Mm-hmm.
When they wanted to get at each other, it wasn't, well, I'm going to start a fight with this guy. It was, I'm going to find some way to push his buttons. And
well, there's a reason the movie
cut people down to increase yourself.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
doesn't work.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason the movie Mean Girls is still a thing today.
Yeah. And they're going to remake it. I mean, it's because that carries through and it's just such.
Well, I mean.
It's just such this pressure to conform and to be just like everyone else. It's so hard. While at the same time, yes, as a 16, 17, 18-year-old, you are trying to find yourself, who you are, what you like, what your future might be.
If the sample size is large enough, there is an inevitability then for tribalism to break out.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's
if there's more than two people, tribalism will break out. Yeah. No, I mean seriously.
Well, yeah, there's some truth to that. Yeah.
Even with two, it might.
And that's one of the things that and I'll go so far to be provocative with my language here. That's one of the evils I think that we really need to get our arms around, because I think, and I'm not being Khan-Noonien Singh, you know, we offer the world order, you know, doing it the one way. I think the fact that
one man,
what's right,
one man with a vision.
That's right. To recognize that is so often what destroys us. As a society is, and I've heard it.
The conformity or the seeking to be an individual.
Well,
yes,
I think
tribalism.
Tribalism is what I'm speaking of specifically.
Okay, yes,
mm-hmm. But tribalism has both of those aspects.
It does.
If you are willing to be in the tribe,
yes,
okay,
mm-hmm. That's but the conform side.
When members of the tribe look at an outsider and say, "You will conform."
Uh-huh.
Then that's where you start to have some stuff.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Oh, I see.
That's you know,
an externally focused tribe.
That's where we must have order comes in.
It's an expansionist
tribe. You're not going to be allowed
uh-huh.
to be outside the tribe.
Well,
you must be inside the tribe.
Or well, if you are outside, you are to be.
You would be brought in forcibly.
Well,
destroyed.
That's where I'm going.
So,
and I'm speaking of our political environment today.
So I'll throw a hand grenade into that. Basically, they're Soviet communists.
Well, yeah, that's a curse.
I mean, certainly the writers.
I don't mean philosophical. I mean, that's just the methodology.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it absolutely is.
Yeah. Yeah,
that or everybody ends up dead in the jungle.
I mean, yeah, Bolshevism is very much
gulag.
That way.
Yeah, gulag, yeah.
If you're not a Bolshevik, you're not a communist.
Right.
And then that's, you know.
That's right. The Trotskyites must be destroyed.
Destroyed. And when you get to, like, the international brigades in the Spanish Civil War, you know, it fell apart because you weren't leftist enough.
Right.
You know, it's like.
Correct.
You know, we already have Franco shooting at us, and now we're going to shoot at each other. We, you know.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
So return to the original point. He said that as you grow older, the need to conform to the societal norm or the average decreases, and I would agree with that, because you develop your own tribe, to use the tribalism metaphor,
mm-hmm. Okay, yeah,
and you surround yourself with people of like-mindedness, so maybe you define your own tribe and
to a degree, yeah,
and
but you give less of a shit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I was trying to say it a little bit more succinctly. Yeah,
Brother Andre is he's a little more reserved than we are.
But that is an aspect of tribalism, is that, that your tribe doesn't give a shit.
Well, I mean, there's a reason that, you know, the crotchety old man character in every movie is always outside the group, you know.
Yeah,
because he doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
Most movies, though, you find out he really does care that he's
out. He does. He just wants to care on his own terms.
Right, which is part of the problem. I would put forth that the need to be an individual, because you're talking about when you're young, you're talking about, well, no, it's mostly about the conforming. I'd say that you can't have one with the other, because you cannot find out who you are as an individual, especially when you are young in high school, without adopting something from, you know, becoming one of these other tribes, because you have to try on these other identities to find out what fits you.
Try on is that's a good image on that. I was thinking
really
like
that.
Which kind of leads to a disquieting possibility, though, is that at a younger age, that the idea of independent thought is frowned upon by their peers. Is that a fair statement?
It's a fair statement. Yeah. I think it's also there's almost no independent thought when you're.
Yeah. I mean, that's what. Who are your favorite teachers?
More
in school, the ones that wanted you to think on your own.
All right.
I think it's more frowned upon by the adults, the parents.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Because you're pushing against that.
Well, and in fairness, that is a flaw in parenting, to be honest, because mm-hmm. what you are literally trying to hold back a glacier. That is the whole point of growing up.
Yeah.
Is being able to do that, and it is a weakness on those parents in particular.
It's
natural, but.
Well, I think that's part of parent. I think it's part of the job of a parent, though.
Yeah,
to control
is to put those boundaries out there.
Yes.
So that I mean, the ideal would be that a parent can help, because obviously you can't do it 100% for the child, because they will definitely rebel against that.
Yeah.
But you got to figure out a way to put those boundaries out there, because for one, a lot of kids, even without realizing it, they like to have those boundaries.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But two, you need to have boundaries that. Even if they're somewhat elastic, because often they have to be, that allow them to stretch and grow. But you don't want them to be able to go off and do it in an unlimited fashion, because it's dangerous. Because for one thing, your brain is undeveloped, not fully developed until right. you're 25, 26 years old. That's not, that's a given, a scientific fact.
Right.
And when you are that young, first of all, you think you're invincible.
Yeah.
by this point in our lives, we are. Well, okay. The Imperator is invincible, apparently. At least he's unkillable.
I'm a cockroach. I admit it.
That's right. Yeah,
I think a lot of parental angst comes from, you incorporate your children into your tribe with your own values and critiques. And as they grow and try on different regimes, they grow into a separate person and sometimes may grow out of your. Societal norms of your family, and I think that's where a lot of parents struggle.
As
children grow into their own person,
right.
Yep.
And sometimes that's it should be a natural and good thing to a degree, but we've all it's easy. It's hard to find that mushy middle where most people are. Mm-hmm. It's easy to find the extremes where
the extremes stand out.
The
father who kicks out his 16-year-old daughter for getting pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
That's somebody who's taking the boundaries to the ultimate
nuclear option.
And, yes, the nuclear option, and nobody wins in that situation.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it is a generational. I'll go so far as to say the word sin that he commits, because then the entire concept of fatherhood is poisoned for that daughter and probably her children, and maybe even further on.
Further on. Yeah.
So yeah, how we behave does matter.
We've been freezing out Cajun a little bit because we've been rocking and rolling here.
I know, I've been
so
making sure.
Let's turn Cajun in on some of this.
Well, I agree with part of it being said and so forth. I mean, high school, I figure it's about Dante's 10th circle most of the point.
Oh, brilliant. Very well.
Not usually
I'm sorry.
A warm and welcoming place.
No, but for that you get...
Word boner.
Yeah,
Dante's 10th circle is high school. That's awesome.
That's tremendous.
Oh, my gosh, that's
it's
awesome.
It's never easy to be yourself in an institution of any kind, whether it's family, public, high school, wherever. And wherever you have structure, to be yourself is sometimes quite difficult. I was in a seminar yesterday, and we were doing a little workshop about where you want to see yourself in 20 years and so forth, and... this one guy comes up, and I don't remember what his exact goal is, but what he said after his goal really strikes home to this. He said he was told to go crawl in a hole and die. That was how much he was wanted by a member of his family.
Oh, good.
That's unfathomable to me. But I mean, I know it happens, but it's just
hard
to understand.
It's a variation on the theme you mentioned. You kick the daughter out.
Yes.
For that sort
so
of thing.
So try to be yourself sometimes. It can be quite detrimental to one's psyche.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And being oneself because everybody else is taken, that's really not even entirely true, because nobody is truly 100% themselves. If you are in some kind of relationship of any kind, whether it's a romantic relationship or a brotherhood like this, to just the acquaintances you have at work, you modify your behavior and your words and your actions based on where you're at. Yeah. Nobody is 100%, with the possible exception of Martin's grumpiness.
but isn't that your true self at that moment in time?
Not necessarily.
I mean, well,
sometimes you are willing to endure a bunch of crap just to get out of there and get home for the day.
That's called work.
Just for the harmony.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can see it may or may not be voluntary on your. I mean, ultimately, it is voluntary. It's a choice.
Yes, it is a choice,
but it may there may be extenuating circumstances to make it possibly good, possibly bad. Wilde would say that's bad. You should have the freedom to be your true self whenever you wish.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is, if everybody that did that, basically we have what we've talked about in the past, where we have there are no moral standards.
Well, that's right. Yeah,
there are no legal standards other than what one whims or has the power to enforce, and society is just chaos.
See, I was wondering if we were going to get to that, because you're right. If we are all individuals with a
me first,
that's right, with a sanctity put first on individual choice,
yeah,
whatever you wish.
Yeah, selfishness. Yeah,
that's right. If selfishness is coronated, go ahead and hit the word.
Oh yes, that is a very good.
I thought you'd like it.
Word boner.
Yeah. Then it is the tyranny of in our society it would be the majority, but ultimately it is we are all our own little king, queen, pope, whatever you want to call that, mm-hmm. And that is definitely a recipe for chaos, as we're saying here.
Right.
Well, you can have a broad field of individual options here, but ultimately there are boundaries. And I think our
whether they're self-imposed or societally.
Correct. That's right. Yeah. And I do
but no, there are.
Yeah, I mean
they're acceptable, yes.
Right.
Yes, if they're acceptable.
You know, because everyone who has a normal functioning, properly functioning brain has a conscience that recognizes when you stray close. Those who do not, we call them psychopaths.
Or Democrats.
He went there.
We're not supposed to do that. No. We have to skip a bit, brother. But yeah, there is an understanding there.
I don't know. Some of the extreme right wings know better.
Absolutely.
Not.
That's correct.
No, and those are another party.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I spit on both of them. I really do.
Uh-huh. Very much so. I think it's kind of it's an example of the fact that whatever it takes to win is all we care about. But that's another subject.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's extreme individualism on both sides, mm-hmm. In the sense that. You know,
exactly.
We've talked about it before. You know, Republicans and Democrats—they're both liberals. No matter what they say, one wants. You know, you can't tell me how to use my money. You can't tell me how to use my body.
Yeah,
they're two sides of the same coin.
Right. Wow, man, we getting this bad boy. Real.
Wow, yeah, we are really just.
Is it time?
Yes, it is time.
You know what? Now would be a good time.
The bourbon break, gentlemen.
He stole my line.
I had to. It came out of me like effluvia.
You're being a little too much you.
Effluvia usually comes out the other end.
Yeah, I understand. That's great.
Not with him.
Are we going to let Cajun go first since it's 8 a.m. there?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say.
Are you drinking anything, Cajun?
Actually, I had a little coffee with a sugar-free caramel shot and just a touch of bourbon in it.
Excellent for you.
With my old favorite, Edwin Williams, 1783, which I've talked about several times. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've been meaning to pick up a bottle of that.
Don't realize at this early hour.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. Yeah, I mean, you've probably not even had breakfast yet.
No.
Bourbon is breakfast.
Yeah. Well, you know, you notice that we always do breakfast before we start in the morning, because we start way too early to be drinking bourbon on an empty stomach.
Yeah. Yep. 1780. Yeah. That is a go to Evan Williams. In fact, I have a bottle of that Cajun left at my house actually in the public area of the house.
We sing its praises regularly, especially for a budget option.
I'm really wanting to pick up one of the small batch 1783 black label. Because it's still very, even though it's a small batch, it's still in the mid-20s here, which is phenomenal.
Yep.
All right. So what else we got going on here, guys? Who wants to go first? Robert?
I'll go because, you know, sometimes you can't shut me up. So if I can go first, maybe.
And they accuse me of that all the time. Yes.
Well, only in your prologues.
Oh, Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, not only.
Preamble to everything.
And post logs. Yeah.
Skip a bit, brother. Let's go.
And the stuff in between.
Yeah. And the stuff in between, yeah. So Francis poured me a glass of the Basil Hayden Toasted.
I cracked that bottle just for you, sir.
Yes. And this is one I have been wanting to try for quite a while since I've seen it on the shelves, but I just hadn't had a chance to pick it up yet. And because I've been very interested in comparing some of the toasted bourbons.
Yeah.
Since we were at Bourbon Fest, because that's the first place I'd really mm-hmm. encountered the concept.
Right.
And when I first tasted it, the toasting, I think it produces a bit more of that oaky flavor.
Okay.
But like Basil Hayden, most Basil Haydens, this is just a wonderful combination of sweet and creamy, tempered by that oaky to me.
Okay, so that's not a harsh...
No, I would not call this harsh, especially once you've put the ice in it and let it bloom some.
Right.
I mean, that usually softens most bourbons, mm-hmm. but sometimes it makes the bourbon flavors disappear, but this, it really...
So it really mellowed out all the rye flavor?
Yes, very much so.
Right. Yeah, and we're all using spherical ice here today, too. The larger size, and thank you, Cajun, for turning me into... onto the
icy balls.
The little
of ice.
The mold. Yeah,
the mold.
And y'all were talking about me at the beginning. Come now, good fellow.
But no,
I want to jump on the toasted. I'll just make one mention on anything I've had toasted. It adds a little bit more nuttiness to it too, to me.
Nuttiness. Oh, okay.
Good. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's good because, like, I haven't had that yet. And I haven't had any toasted version yet, so I'm really interested. I may do that next time around.
Yeah. This is my first real deep experience with toasted. They're just a little bit of tastings mm-hmm. at Bourbon Fest.
Yeah, which so, and they blurred. They blurred so fast.
So I'm really – this is one I want to spend some more time with at some point to really get and do some comparisons because the toasted is really starting to appear more often on the shelves.
It is. And you know, you guys know I'm a big Basil Hayden fan. That's why I'm trying to work my way through all the varieties. And I've got three of them.
They've really expanded the line.
They really have. And I've picked up three of the others that I brought with me today. Toasted in one and a red wine cask is what I've had. And we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, I'm really interested to hear what that
– Yeah, and – And also, I got the malted rye, which is out. Malted barley. That's out there, which is a totally different experience. Mm-hmm. Perhaps haven't cracked it yet, but we're going to see. But Andre, what did you pour?
I poured Buffalo Trace. I'd heard many good things about it, and I have to admit, I might be a little disappointed. It doesn't have a bad taste. It doesn't have a great taste. The best way I can describe it is it's very thin.
Thin.
Interesting. Now, did you wait and let the ice melt?
I tasted it both times. Before it had fully bloomed, I got hints of licorice and maybe some raspberry.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ooh, wow.
But as it bloomed, it became, as you mentioned, more diffuse and it lost the bourbon flavor.
As I say about the Blantons, there's no there.
Okay. That is a great description.
Yeah. Because when we were at Cajun's for Bourbon Fest, we tried a bottle of Blanton's that Martin had procured for him.
Yeah, I scored him three bottles.
Three bottles, yes.
Yeah,
and it's one that I would say Blanton's is one that is best, not necessarily best, but very, very small amounts of ice or neat. Because mm-hmm. It was very good neat.
I'm going neat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But once it starts to bloom, it just kind of blends away.
And you know, and that may be their claim. I know Martin has never been a fan of Buffalo Trace. You've said that
toothpaste.
Yeah, that's right. But I do think that we had given it a real good shot because you kind of like if.
Well, it is very popular. I mean,
very much so.
Well, and they have other really good brands, in the distillery. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean,
I think Buffalo Trace could be comparable to Maker's Mark. They had a really good marketing program really got it out there and made it. Its popularity through their marketing, not necessarily a higher quality.
I can agree with that.
Well, is that a Sazerac product?
Yes, and it's one of the ones that are all on the allocation. Yeah. So it's the hard to get one, and then the E.H. Taylor, the Eagle Rare,
right.
are all in that family.
Mm-hmm. And it's a limited number of mash bills, too. It's one of those ones that is.
It is. And so
it's all interesting that
should be fairly similar, but somehow.
But you know, as we talked about with Brother Andre at breakfast, you know, the yeast strain that starts it all out is going to influence that quite a bit as well, because they may have the same mash bill, but not necessarily the yeast strain that they start the distillation.
And how they blend them, and
yeah, and how they blend
and.
Deeper char, yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of things we've talked about go into.
Yeah, I don't think Buffalo Trace has an age statement, but certainly Eagle Rare is supposed to be 10-year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love Eagle Rare.
Absolutely.
And we found E.H. Taylor to be awesome.
Thank you, Brother Andre. He's the one that introduced
that
us to that.
That sweet and had the complexity that I just don't get out of Buffalo Trace.
Was there an age statement on the Buffalo Trace?
I didn't look for one on.
I mean, they're becoming rarer and rarer.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually left the bottles in the other room this time. Yeah. We usually bring them with us so we can check these questions that we
have. And the way some places age their bottles, age statements are less, mm-hmm. not less important, but they're less of a factor.
Yeah.
Because they're doing things to I don't want to say artificially age, but they're doing things to help get the bourbon in and out of the charred wood faster, or at least more in a shorter amount of time.
Bring it to market faster.
They're taking more of a scientific approach to it to make it more efficient and more consistent.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's value in that. I get that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you can still find some bottles, not only with age statements, but with dates.
Yes,
when it went in the barrel.
Yes, Knob Creek is very, very good at that.
The Baker 7 mm-hmm. and the Henry McKenna 10-year-old, both... have dates of when that went in the barrel. Mm-hmm. So we've been getting very competitive here lately, too, Robert and Francis and I. I mean, we understand we're living in Cajun shadow.
Yes, he casts a long shadow, yes.
Mm-hmm. But we've been trying to expand our collections.
Truth.
And I was so excited. I wasn't expecting to find that I.W. Harper that I like.
Yes.
That was
a wonderful find at the Sherwood.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of looking online, it looked like, oh, well, there might be a release in June. Yeah. And I walked into Kroger, and there was two bottles. So I snagged them. I've ever invested in a bottle of bourbon.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much was that?
With tax over a C-note.
Wow.
Yeah, well, per bottle? Or
was your butt clenched for, like, the next 2 weeks?
Yes.
We know you too well, sir. That's right.
And, you know, so going to
he
Mrs.
Hasn't
Martin.
Taken a crap since then.
So, you know, go to Mrs. Martin and spending $100 on bourbon, and then I had to go back to her and say, hey, I'm going to spend $100.
Again.
Go hang out at Bellarmine and get a bottle there and listen to a podcast and eat and all that. So, yeah, all of us have got our collections expanding and with high-end stuff. And the I.W. Harper is 15 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
so
that's good stuff.
I mean, so I got two 10-year-olds and a 15-year-old at the house that I'm excited about.
Yeah.
What are you drinking? Because we need it.
This is also courtesy of Francis. This is McTavish.
Yes, it is.
War Chief.
That's right.
Which is... I'm starting to see it out and about a little bit.
Yes, I have too.
Actor Graham McTavish, it's his brand. He's Scottish, and we all know about that. You know, because
this is not Scottish. It's crap.
Freedom. That's right. Yeah, he's an amazing actor. He's been in Outlander. He played one of the dwarves in The Hobbit. He's done lots and lots and lots of stuff. He was actually what turned me on to it was he actually was here promoting the brand just about a month or so ago. Now I did not get a chance because I found out about it right after the fact, but you know, I started looking deeper and deeper into it. I said, wow, this is some pretty good stuff here.
Now, is it a Kentucky bourbon?
No, it is not. But since it's Scottish,
so it's a small B bourbon,
yeah, exactly.
It lists Midwest distilling,
okay,
it doesn't say exactly where. Midwest is a big thing. I mean, Ohio to Colorado is almost,
pretty much,
Midwest.
Yeah,
right.
But it's fairly mellow and smooth.
Yeah.
A little chocolatey, but not super complex.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a one flavor deal.
All right.
Kind of like the what I call the comfort bourbons, like the 1792s and the Four Roses, where it's they're very good, but you know they're not super.
Right. It's like for me at least on my palate, it doesn't give you like a jump to another flavor. I think E.H. Taylor was like that, where it would jump to yet like another flavor.
Yeah, that's right.
Where you would get a couple of different kind of things going on.
Kind of like the guys that on acid sitting at the traffic light keeping going on another color. Sorry. Stealing that from
Robin Williams. Oh, so that explains the people I get behind in this town.
Oh God.
Oh, please.
Reel him back in.
Reel him back in because once he gets started, he'll ruin the rest of his day.
Just yesterday.
Wet the reel, Chief. Wet the reel.
That one's green. That means you can go ahead.
So, Brother Andre, you had the Buffalo Trace. So is it one you would go to again?
I will finish the bottle, but I don't think I will go out and purchase another.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Did you get one to sniff, Imperator?
No, I didn't. But
you two guys have drank it all because you're sitting next to me.
I've had this issue the whole time I've been sitting here. Of why is there a Wile E. Coyote fireplace in here?
We're recording remotely this time.
Yes, we're not in Studio F. We're in the Studio F Annex.
It's all right. Studio F Annex is what we're calling it. I had a reason to be out of the house today, which turned out to be not a reason at all, but we'd already made the process. You know, I tell my wife if I want to get smacked, of course, we don't operate on whim around here. But that usually doesn't work very well when I say that. But no,
Russians don't take a dump without a plan. And we had a plan, so we stuck to it.
Well, that's exactly right. Yes, we're very Russian in that aspect. But no, they since this is a community space that we're using here, it is a house that was purchased by the parish and converted over. It's called the Ministry House, where we would have gatherings and things like that. And the house was built with the fireplace there. But we absolutely did not want anybody to even attempt to use it under any circumstances.
So it is a real fireplace behind that board.
Correct. Oh, that's okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of like, here, we'll put you something nice and faux up here that says, don't you dare try to light a daggone fire in here. Because you never know what some stupid whatever Martin would use in the word.
SOB.
We would try here.
We'll have to get a picture for those of you in the audience.
Oh, yes. We should get a picture for the website.
www.snakesandotters.com.
Yeah, it looks like Wile E. Coyote's trying to trap Santa or something.
So I just want to point out, listeners.
Well, y'all fellas mind if I jump in here for a final thought on today's
show? Yeah, go ahead.
Quietly exiting stage left here in a minute.
All right.
Be yourself, because everyone else is already taken. You know, being yourself is one of the hardest things to do at times, even though you think it should be simple. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. I agree.
And it makes you wonder why it is so complicated to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The effort involved.
I'm just going to leave it at that. That's my thought for it. It's a complicated thing, even though it sounds so simple. It's one of the most difficult things to do.
Very insightful, Cajun.
That's right.
It is very insightful.
Fantastic words.
Well, and I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about that, you know, you have to try on identities.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And when you do, there's always, even if you decide that identity's not for me, some of that is going to be retained. You know, you cannot.
That's a general rule, yeah.
You cannot take it off 100%. It's almost impossible to, because it's going to influence who you are. Yeah, all your experiences influence who you are. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to end up with a lot of conflicting tidbits that make you up. Mm-hmm. And we already have conflicting drives. You know, like I talked about earlier, we want to be an individual, but we want to belong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
well, they could be synchronized, though. They could be things that complement.
That's the hard part. But that really does require a lot of self-reflection, and honesty with yourself,
right?
And almost nobody is willing to do that.
Oh,
because I mean, let's face it, being honest with yourself really has the potential to open up a lot of wounds. I mean, it rips the scab off.
It does,
potentially.
It does in the emotional intelligence world.
And then pours mercurochrome over.
Yeah,
not iodine, mercurochrome.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That stuff there. Yeah. Methylate.
Yes, you're Gen X. That's for sure. Where mercurochrome is.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. That iodine. That's for
wimps.
Weak people. You know.
That's right. Yeah.
They use that on your sister. They use the mercurochrome on you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, a lot of the things in the world that we're asked to do that are hard are simple in concept. You know,
yes.
A lot of people, I think everyone in here are people of faith. Jesus said to love your enemy. Easy to say, very hard to live out.
Oh, yeah, and very countercultural, too. Yes.
And, you know, as Mother
has been.
As Mother Angelica said, it's really hard to love somebody that, you know, you want to push off a cliff.
I had a lady I used to work with. She would say she wanted to pinch their heads off. She's from Tennessee. Yes.
There you go.
But she nailed it. She nailed
or
it exactly right.
If you're from the 80s generation, you want to squeeze their head.
Pop it.
Crush your head.
Unfortunately, we don't have video, but you know, you just put somebody's head between your fingers and pinch.
That's what she was talking about. Then
look at it. You close one eye.
Love your neighbor. How many people have ever prayed for Osama bin Laden?
Not many.
Well, they prayed for things about him, but not for his benefit. That's for certain. Yeah.
I've loved a few neighbors.
Love your neighbor.
What was that?
I've loved a few neighbors.
I'm sure you have.
Oh, Lord. Here he goes. That's right.
I am sure you have. You have probably loved more neighbors than most of us.
Well, you know.
You and Cajun can have a contest about that to see who's loved more neighbors. Yes. Well.
To all the girls I've loved before, as Julio Iglesias would say. That's right.
But you're right, though. It is very hard to do the simple things.
Mm-hmm.
The simplest things to say are almost always the most complex to understand. Three persons, one God.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, that is the most inexplicable, non-understandable statement you will ever encounter.
Well, and that's one of the things that our Muslim brothers and sisters have always railed
against.
And our
Jewish brothers and sisters.
And that too is that no, you guys are not monotheistic. You know, that doesn't compute for them. We have to go. And in fairness to them, we do have to make a significant amount of explanation to say why it is that way.
And they're all wrong.
I would not say incorrect, but I certainly would say incomplete, not even close to reflecting the actual truth.
If you understand God, it's not God.
Well, that's right, absolutely. Right. And we can talk a long time about idolatry and things that we put in place of God, but that's another.
You know, I think that's a. Idolatry is a good way to talk about that. You know, when we are be you because everybody else is taken, in a way, there's a little bit of idolatry in that.
Oh, yeah.
But also in the, well, I also want to be like that other person because I admire things. And those are good things, mm-hmm. to admire traits. And there's a little bit of idolatry in that as well. In the broad sense of the term.
Yeah.
Because we're looking...
And what you do with the idolatry is the difference.
And what you do with it. Because, and obviously, idolatry in the strict definition is worship, true worship of something that is not truly God. But idolatry in the sense that you idolize certain things, that you think those are good traits, good things to aspire to.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Because that's how I think you become better.
Well, yeah, aspiration is a good thing. Wilde's quote would tend to poo-poo that, perhaps.
On its face,
that's right.
But I think probably Wilde would if you force him to go deep into it, we could probably force him to agree that, okay, yes, I can become better, I can become more fully me by aspiring to be better in certain areas, and there's nothing wrong.
Absolutely. That you're being yourself, but you're being a fully actualized version of yourself.
But it does
understand that your actions affect other people.
So so there should be a lens or prism of what we're talking about here, of virtue.
Around what we're
talking about here, it to be worthwhile,
we want to emphasize: being yourself doesn't mean being selfish about yourself. Being yourself means understanding that you do live in a community, even if you don't want to be a part of any particular tribe and be yourself, but you're still a part of a community, and you have responsibilities within that community
that are inevitable. And inescapable.
That are part of...
Unless you want to become a hermit.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, that's a thought I had
part
earlier.
Part of a civilization that thrives. We all have to give a little of ourselves for our civilization to thrive. But I think with Wilde or Nietzsche or even us, you can still be unique. And, you know, having a...
According to Wilde, it's inevitable.
That doesn't mean having a ring in your nose. That means thinking for yourself.
and pursuing the things that will bring you joy in your life.
Very much.
Which is where I think Wilde was going with this.
Yeah.
Even though he was saying it flippantly and offhandedly,
there was a
deeper thought in there. You have to do what brings you joy in life and not what other people tell you will bring you joy.
But even that has to be tempered.
Yeah, that has to be tempered within the value of virtue. Because
hopefully,
for the serial killer, I mean,
bags isn't what brings you joy.
Yeah. The serial killer, what brings him joy is indiscriminate killing of
heads in a freezer.
That sort of thing. Yeah, so
that's why we say, because what brings you joy can very easily become, you know,
anathema. To society?
Well, all right, yeah. Let's not force the word boner again.
No. You've already given it to me once.
But no, I mean, I think what gives you joy can very quickly become narcissism. And that narcissism, to a certain degree, there is some healthy narcissism in the sense that you have a strong identity. But that pursuit of what brings you joy can be disordered. Both morally.
I think we're going to the extremes here with the axe murder. And
well, I understand,
and whatnot,
but
the extremes illustrate the point.
Yeah, the exception proves the rule.
Not the exceptions, but they are the examples that prove.
Brother Andre, I don't mean to discard the point you're making, because you're absolutely right. It's
that's why I say it has to be tempered.
It is finding your joy.
Mm-hmm.
It is finding what part of who can I be that makes me joyful inside.
Yeah, correct.
But that is not 100% unfettered license.
Right.
Exactly.
I think that's the word we've been dancing around. Finally got that.
That is good. That is a good way to phrase it.
Yeah, because that for many in this world.
Yeah, I mean,
that is what they is. It must be unfettered, and whatever I want to do must be not. And here's where we get into the insidious part. Not just permitted, but celebrated.
Yes. Yeah,
and celebrated. That's where there's an imposition area where
being
yourself has moved out of the individual and into a subversive territory.
Okay. Well, for some people, they get joy from forcing their views on others.
Well, and
But isn't that just a disordered personality?
Well, that's what I was talking about.
We would agree. Yeah. We would absolutely agree.
Hold on here. Now, where would this lie with, you know, a goal of myself? Which is that I plan to take a trip to Antarctica so I can lay there at the South Pole and show my wife that once and for all, the world does revolve around my penis.
Only you, Imperator, could make that work. But that is good. That's very good, actually. Yes.
That's being yourself.
That's right.
And finding a joy.
Yeah.
While at the same time, you're not impeding anyone else's joy.
Well, that's correct.
Well, is that maybe Mrs. Imperator?
But she
signed up for that. She knew what she was getting into.
She can take care of herself.
Be a part of his life.
Yes, yes, she can take care of herself.
So yeah, I mean, I got no problem with that, yo. Uh-huh.
All right. So you're suggesting that here we go back to that. As long as I'm not hurting about anybody else, I should be able to do what I want.
Uh-huh.
Because that's exactly what you just said, and I'm trying to say.
I am giving the Imperator a little.
He is our brother. We love him. We wish him to have find his
bliss.
But
the ultimate, of course, is finding joy in yourself over someone else's joy.
Over someone else's joy?
So, if it gives me a warm fuzzy inside that you're going to have success as a writer.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that the ultimate of being myself?
Ah. In other words,
that's really the goal, is not just celebrating good things that happened to me, but celebrating the good things.
Desiring the good
that
for the other
people have.
For the sake of the other. It is the definition of keritas.
That is exactly it. That's exactly it. Martin over here has.
Please note that the heathen is the one who brought up keritas.
Yes.
Word boner.
The irony is not lost on me that Martin is the one who recognized the Catholic social teaching in that entire phrase of what we're talking about here. Because you're
Martin
exactly right.
Often backs into, pun intended, those kinds of things, whether intentionally or unintentionally.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exactly right, because ultimately, and this goes back to John Donne, No Man Is an Island, you really can't, no matter how much you wish to fulfill your you-ness, you still must have some wish, desire, effort toward the good of the society in which you live, in either small or large ways. It could be just with your neighbor, as the Imperator has told us how he's done very well, or it could be with the entire society at large or any point therein.
Right. I mean,
well, you are a mere animal if you don't.
Yeah,
exactly. That is exactly it, because that is what separates us. To get into the Christian.
Now, there are animals that have pack mentalities.
Sure, you know, absolutely.
They do for the good of the pack. But those are...
pack, herd.
But the pack serves only the base needs.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, or the herd. That's correct. There's
to hunt or to be safe.
Yes.
Is essentially...
Or to procreate.
Yeah.
Which are, you know, the most
pack,
basic needs.
I mean the primary function of a pack is to hunt.
Yes,
that is correct.
To find food for the pack.
Primary purpose of a herd is to protect everyone.
To attempt to protect.
And the procreation is like salmon. You have to go together, and I know there's kind of chicken or the egg type thing there about that that image there. But you're right. Only in humanity is the possibility of working for the good of the other a thing,
or finding joy in someone else's triumph.
Well, let's put it this way.
I mean, chimps don't celebrate that another chimp did something great.
I would argue that you find your true joy when you find the way you serve others.
Oh, well, that's kind of where I'm trying to...
Yeah, I mean, that's very much, yeah.
Yeah, you are really... And granted, this is from a specific religious background, even though it's not couched in religious terms exactly. But you are most yourself. You are most your true individual. You know, your identity is the fullest, both in the context of that inherent dignity of the human person, because that goes both ways, your own as well as others. And as you said, celebrating the wins of others. Actually, you put it that way, Martin. Mm-hmm. But it's rejoicing in not just your own accomplishments, but in the other, as you put it, wanting the best for the other, for the sake of the other.
That's right. With no expectation or desire or intention of recompense or
You're not looking for that to shine back on you. You're just happy for them.
Right. Because in that
it is the next step. It's
that
being yourself is one thing, and then being great with someone else being great, and they're earned triumph.
Right, not being jealous, not being angry over it. It is, to me, that is the fullest expression.
Yeah,
I mean,
the lottery dumps on your head for, then I don't have to be all excited for you. But if it's from your own efforts, I'm very pleased.
We might, to try to wrap this up a little bit here, I would say that are we agreeing with Wilde in this, in his thing?
There's lots of caveats.
With this caveat, simplify.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down with him totally, but...
But assuming that when he says be yourself, he means your best self.
Your best self.
I think that would be impressive.
I think that's kind of what we're dancing around here.
You know, the other part of it being, everyone else is taken, is the idea that, don't subsume your identity into anything else.
Absolutely, that's correct.
Don't
you will never find fulfillment there.
You have value as an individual,
yeah,
because of the inherent dignity of the human person. We just said it twice in 2 minutes. But that we focused a lot on that first part without really talking a lot about that second.
Yeah.
But that second is very much don't lose yourself in the crowd.
Which
would be a very, Wildean thing.
Yeah, it is ultimately unfulfilling and perhaps even dangerous.
Yes. Yeah, right. I mean, again, we desire conformity. We desire belonging.
Mm-hmm.
But belonging down that road is you lose your sense of self, your sense of your worth and your identity outside of community.
Yeah.
And that's cultism.
No, I was going to say, that's exactly where I was going to say. That's where that ends, is in cultism. That,
identity cannot be based entirely on your membership in any particular...
Yeah, don't surrender your individuality for anything.
And that's not necessarily easy for humans. I
mean, it's not.
Which is exactly why we're talking about it.
We have an inherent need to want to be loved.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's correct. Yeah.
That's yes, that's part of that need to belong.
Yeah, that's why we seek out that community. Exactly.
Celebrated, you know, all of that. That's kind of where we get to that. We want that, and that's why we, you know, demand that in certain cases, perhaps to our detriment. Wow. You know, we have done
this. That turned out better than I was thinking there in the middle.
Oh, okay.
I was a little worried we were a little too much comedy there. We were too agreeing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
didn't have an argument. I mean, I always love it when Francis and I have an argument. We started one about James II in our chat.
It's going to come up. We're going to do one.
Like, this is great. We had an argument within 10 seconds.
Well, we all know that, you know, conflict is the essence of good writing. You know, fiction writing. You know,
sharpens the blade. Yeah.
Absolutely, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah. Well, now this we had a really nice little set of agreement there, and it came out pretty good.
It is, but you know, we're also making declarative philosophical statements.
Right. Society is nothing more than the successful resolution of conflicts.
That's right. Exactly.
And
at whatever level,
and being the best you that you can be is nothing more than the successful resolution of internal conflicts.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. I think that hits us right where we need to end this bad boy. Mm-hmm. You guys
all right.
Good with that?
And that ends our conversation with a period.
Robertus Malleus has brought home the show once
Indeed
again.
Indeed he mm-hmm. has.
So, Francis, brother, what is next time?
Hoop-a-joo, boys.
Hoop-a-joo.
Absolutely. We're going to do Hoop-a-joo. We're gonna take what Cajun has kind of laid out with us on this community of writing, and we're going to go a little bit deeper with that. We're going to recognize, you know, and I think this is me prognosticating, we're going to get a little bit more into the necessity of community in mm-hmm. all things. So who knows where this is going to go? You know how good we are with this sort of stuff. So listeners, be here. You'll love it.
We hope you enjoyed another pointless discussion of Eternal Questions. Remember, new episodes drop every second and fourth Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern, just in time for your morning commute. And every fifth Friday, we drop a special Hoop-a-Joob episode. Spread the word. We are on all the major platforms. And leave us a review. That helps others find us. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, as well as our website, snakesandotters.com. Join us next time, same snake time, same otter channel.